This is the Spencer Wilson Show.
Travis Ishikawa hits one in the right. The Giants win the pennant.
Trying to fight up a shot. Block, loose ball, 1 second. And Nevada wins.
Oh! Oh!
This is going to be a tough play. Bryant, the Cubs win the World Series. Bryant makes the play. It's over. And the Cubs have finally won it all.
Balotelli.
Here's your host, Spencer Wilson.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome inside ESPN Studios. This is the Spencer Wilson Show. I'm your host, Spencer Wilson. We have Sean Cloud on the board.
How's everyone doing?
Haley here in studio as well.
Hello.
It's a full house. It's a packed house. Sean's fiance is also here. Hi. A lot of people in here. A lot to get to. We're going to have Chris Stroud, defending Barracuda champion, on the show. We're going to have Jaden Orvell, Wolfpack football head coach, on the show as well. We'll talk a little baseball as we get set to go into the second half of the season. But let's start talking about a team right now that is playing great baseball, and that is the Reno Aces. They're coming off their second series out of the All-Star break. They came back playing El Paso and had a fairly good series. They won all four games. So these first eight games so far, they've won seven of them. They're 7-1 coming out of the All-Star break, playing great baseball. 8-2 against El Paso in the first game. They beat them 7-3 and 4-1 on their Saturday doubleheader, and 4-1 on Sunday. And going into their series against Tacoma, a team which took 3 out of 4 against the Aces in their second series before going into the All-Star break. So you see kind of this familiarity with this team, and they just played solid baseball for four straight games. That first game, little wonky, little lopsided, but those three games after, especially the one on Tuesday, the 10-9 comeback victory, being on the board for that one was just amazing, and they're just playing great baseball right now.
Were you jumping up and down like a little girl?
I don't know if it was a little girl. I don't know if it was to that standpoint. I don't know if I was at, like, child excitement level. But I was definitely having some fun in my own fandom there, enjoying watching the game. 1868 on a little bit of a break right now. They did have a friendly against that club from the Mexican League that I butchered last week. I'm not going to even try to say the name again. Just out of pure respect for their club and their players, I'm not going to say it again. I couldn't find a score on that game. Their website did not have one up. Sean, are you looking at it right now?
Which game are we looking for?
It was the one against, it's like Miraculous or something like that.
The Monarchs?
Yes. No. The Real Monarchs?
Yeah. The last one that they had was against the LA Galaxies. That's the last game that they're showing.
Yeah, their schedule didn't have it up either. They did have a friendly last Saturday. Like I said, I couldn't find a score for that. It was against a team from the Mexican League. But they're taking a break from league play right now. A week from tomorrow, the 28th, they will be back in action. I believe at home?
Yes.
Yes. So they will be here at home next Saturday picking up league play again, coming off their short break. But if you can get out to experience, the Las Vegas 51s are coming into town right now to play Reno, starting a 3-game series against them. That's an oddity this season. Not a whole lot of 3-game series, I feel like.
Yeah, there's really not. I know there was one earlier in the season, maybe two, and I know we lost them.
It feels like it's been mostly like 4- and 5-game series.
4 and 5, definitely.
Yeah.
And by the way, the name of that was the
Monarchs. Yep.
Morelia.
See, that's the one. Monarchs Morelia.
I believe that's how you're gonna say
You said it a lot better than I did last week. but yes, they played them again. I can see it right now. They still don't have a score up on their 1868 website. So not sure how that went, but the way they've been playing, I would put money on the fact they either won or they drew, because they've been playing really, really well. So like we said, Vegas coming in to play Reno, and I think the biggest thing for them, being this is the last home series before they go on the road for a little while. They have New Orleans and Round Rock coming up to round out this month, both on the road. And the key is going to be really what it's been these first couple series coming out of the All-Star break, being able to hit and then being able to hold off the retaliation from the team. Because that was the big thing. They'd score a run or two, and then Tacoma would score a run or two, and they'd do that for an inning. And then later in the game, you'd see Reno score and fend him off. And that's really where I feel like struggling has been. They've been able to score, but they haven't been able to keep that lead, and they did that really nicely against Tacoma.
Right. They need to keep those relief pitchers strong and healthy, because, I mean, we saw even Scherfey had points scored on him. Miller had points scored on him. You know, our strong closers weren't able to hold out. So maybe they're not getting enough reps. Maybe they don't remember how to throw the ball. I'm not sure, but they just need rest and to be there.
Yeah, big ups to Natale Flees, who had a nice start last night in his game. Former pro pitcher, kind of. I didn't even know he was on the roster until I saw the roster before the season this year. I was like, oh my gosh, that's the name that jumped right off the page. And not sure how those guys act when they get sent down, especially one like Feliz, who was on the Rangers when they made World Series appearances. Right. Now he's back in AAA, but he seems to be doing really well and had a solid start last night.
Yeah.
So fingers crossed that pitching staff keeps it up and keeps it going. And when we come back from break, we're going to have PGA Tour golfer and last year's Barracuda champion Chris Stroud in studio. And that's coming up right after this break. You're listening to the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show.
All right, we're here in studio talking to PGA golfer and 2017 Barracuda champion, Chris Stroud. Chris, thanks for coming in and talking to us. We were talking a little bit just now about your flying experiences. How was the flight coming into Reno this time?
Yeah, I didn't expect that. Obviously, I've been flying all over the world for 20 years, starting back in college, and I've flown international, everything. But I didn't know that a three-hour flight from Chicago coming to Reno was going to be so rough. The last 25 minutes, we had some kind of consistent turbulence, and pretty big plane, and you wouldn't think it had that. And the captain came on, he said, "You guys just hang in there." He said, "This is tough." And then you could hear some people starting to barf. I'm like, "Oh my gosh, this is not good." But it took me about an hour. I felt like I had seasickness, but I'm all good. Happy to be here. Really excited to be a defending champ this year in Barbasol. Barracuda Championship.
Great to have you here in Reno. It's always great to have the PGA mm-hmm. coming here to the local area. Let's talk about where you just came from. You just got done with the John Deere Classic. You had four really solid rounds in that tournament. How do you kind of feel about your performance?
You know, last year obviously was a 20-year dream come true. It was just really amazing how things unfolded. And, you know, I think the story, you hear it all the time from guys winning their first tournament. They feel like they go in this zone and everything gets quiet and calm, and it's true. It really is. And you get in these moments and things just sort of happen and just go your way. It was really exciting. And I think what, for me, you know, basically everybody on tour, they're all studs growing up in junior golf and college, and they get in the pros, and now the guys are so good coming out. It's pretty amazing to see the 21 and 22 and 23-year-old guys can win on the PGA Tour. It used to not be, when I first got on tour in 07, that didn't happen. But anyway, it took me a long time. It took me 11 years to win for my first event. I lost on a playoff in 2013, the Travelers Championship. I had, I have 30 top 10s and about, I think, 18 top 5s. So I've had a lot of chances. But to actually win the golf tournament, it's tough. I mean, you have to have a couple of bounces go your way. So to finally have that happen, it was pretty amazing, pretty cool story. I don't tell a lot of people this, but it's a pretty personal story. My caddy and I, because we won a Barracuda Championship last year, we got in the PGA Championship. We weren't already in, but we squeezed in. So we had to drive to Sacramento and then fly across the country for the next week. Well, as we're driving, you know, we stayed up late. We had a bunch of media stuff after the tournament, got the trophy ceremony and all these things, and then we're just having a couple cocktails. We're so exhausted from so many weeks in a row, and then obviously winning the emotion of that. Well, we're driving over to Sacramento. My caddy's driving. I have 1,000 text messages and emails and calls, and I'm trying to do my best. And all of a sudden, my caddy hands his phone to me as we're driving, and it's a picture of me holding the trophy. And I just broke down in tears. I did not expect it. I hadn't cried. I'm not really a big crier, but I was like, that's how much it meant. And it was the first time, because I've seen that in my mind for so many years, but to finally see something like that come to fruition, and to have me be a PGA Tour pro, to win a PGA Tour event in the fashion that I did it, was pretty exciting. So to see all those, you know, boy dreams, starting when I was 9 years old, I wanted to be on the PGA Tour, to have that come true was pretty special. So very excited to be back. Like I said, it's hard to win, but I'm playing very well. It's been a slow year this year, mainly because I was kind of playing the last few years with some really old equipment, and I felt like I needed to kind of upgrade. So I've sort of done a lot of equipment changes this year, and it's tricky. I haven't played bad. I'm just my average has gone up. This is crazy. My average has gone up 1.5. So my average is 71.8, and I'm 157 in FedEx points. The best years I've ever had, I average 70.3. So 1.5 shots a day makes about a $3 million difference on the PGA Tour.
That's crazy.
So, I've got everything pretty much figured out, starting to play really well. And because it was sort of a free year this year, I'm not forced to finish in the top 125 to get my job back next year. I have a free year. I kind of let myself, you know, off the hook and said, let's get my stuff right. Let's get the team right. Let's get the equipment right, and that way next year we can really make a good run. But I've sort of done it quickly, and I'm ready to roll. I'm starting to play some pretty good golf. I played pretty good last week. John Deere, I shot 12 under. I didn't make a lot of putts, but you know, there's some good positive things coming, and good time like last year. I started hot this time of year, and everybody's pretty worn out from all the majors and the heat. And it's a good time for Chris Stroud to get hot and golf again.
Yeah. You talk about a lot of emotions that you had going through that first championship, and really it's a long schedule, the PGA Tour schedule. So how do you manage those emotions when you manage your schedule? Because it's not a set schedule like an NBA or NFL where you have these teams playing each other. You have a list of events. So how do you manage yourself mentally and emotionally as you go through that schedule, that entire season?
That's a great question. It has been talked about for a long time, the last few years. We, as a tour, we are very blessed to have more and more events. We used to have January through about September, even maybe first week of October, we would have, that was our running year, and then we would be done for 2.5 months, and guys just put the clubs down and go spend the time with the families, go on vacations, and have the holidays off. It's not that case anymore. Now that we've got this new fall series, we've backed the end of our season is in August, which is kind of weird. But we do that for TV purposes because we don't want to compete with football, which makes perfect sense. Yep. It's really smart for golf, and Jay Monahan, the commissioner of PGA Tour, has done a great job and his team of planning that because it's taken a few years to get that into position. And now we basically run. We start our year in October, and we run all the way back around to August. Yeah. So it is a full year, never stop, very similar to baseball. And you know, the biggest thing, I was talking last week, Bryson DeChambeau had to pull out. He hurt his shoulder during the tournament. He's defending champ of John Deere. And I said, that's going to happen more and more often. And it's not it's because everybody's having to play more. We have more opportunities to play, so it's hard to want to sit home. Mm-hmm. You want to be home to rest and you need to rest, but you want to go play. There's more opportunities to play. There's more courses. There's more money to play for. There's more tournaments. There's just more and more opportunities for us to play, which is a blessing, but at the same time, it's like a double-edged sword.
Yeah,
you want to play more, have more opportunities, but you have to rest your body. Usually, I've always said, I like to work out, and when I can't get in the gym because I'm so tired and worn out, then I've played too much.
Yeah,
and I'm kind of on the cusp of that right now. I've got about a half a week off. I've got to go back home tomorrow, back to Houston. I've got a week off this week, and then I've got three more in a row, and then three more for the FedEx. And then a week off, and then so I really, if everything goes as planned, and I play great all the way into the FedEx and get to East Lake, I'm gonna play Canada, Reno. I'm sorry, four in a row: Canada, Reno, PGA Championship, Greensboro, and then three more in the FedEx. That's seven, and then a week off. So I could literally play 8 out of 9 weeks coming up.
Jeez,
it is a lot. It's a grueling schedule. You really have to take care of your body. It comes down to everything you put in your body: eating, drinking, how much sleep you're getting every day. It really, and you can see there's more and more guys spending more money on recovery and getting guys to get massages and deep tissue massages and all this sports therapy every day just to try to recover your body.
And we've seen that not only is the schedule tough, but there are a lot of challenging courses out there, especially we've seen with some majors this year, the U.S. Open being it now, of course, the Open Championship coming up, that getting a lot of attention for the tough course. I'm wondering, what's the toughest course you've ever played?
Well, actually, Carnoustie, they're playing this week at the British Open, or as they say, the Open Championship. They don't like you calling it the British Open over there, but we call it the British Open over here just to make it everybody understand it a little easier. But I've been lucky enough to fly over there with Jim Curran, the owner of the Astros, to play in the Dunhill Links Championship, which is exactly like the Pebble Beach AT&T Pro-Am of the PGA Tour for the European Tour.
Okay.
And if you have a guy that's played over there, like Jim Curran has played many years, you can fly on a jet over there with him and play, and you play St. Andrews, Carnoustie, and King's Barnes, and then you play Sunday at St. Andrews. The first year I went over there, I finished second, and I loved it. And Carnoustie's one of them, and Carnoustie is probably, they used to, you know, the nickname is Carnasty, because if the weather gets bad, it is really impossible to play.
Mm-hmm.
Just really penal off the tee. The bunkers are incredibly deep and all that. But it was, honestly, a few weeks ago in Washington, D.C., we played TPC Potomac at Avenel. That is probably one of the toughest golf courses on tour. It's tight. It's long. There's not really any bailout. You hit it in the rough, you're going to make a bogey unless you make a great par save. San Diego Torrey Pines, notorious for being the South course. Even the North course is tough now. They fixed it and made it even tougher, but that's one of the toughest. But, you know, at the end of the day, we want tough, we want fair, and it's hard to get that combination. And there's a few others in there, but those right there are definitely some of the toughest.
You say, you just mentioned about having a course that's tough and fair. There was a lot of talk coming off of Shinnecock Hills in the U.S. Open. The USGA actually apologized for that course. What's kind of your feeling around that? Because being a major, we do expect it to be tough. Did it warrant an apology? Because now it kind of sets us up with Carnoustie now being talked about as a tough course. Are we going to expect another apology if it's too tough?
You know, it's really tricky. The USGA, you know, they have a lot of pressure on them every year to set up one tournament for all the PGA Tour pros and European Tour pros that basically try to get the best field in golf. They don't necessarily get the best field in golf, but they get a very strong field. But they have one tournament to set up. You know, it's not like all year long our PGA Tour, we have every week it's the same teams coming in preparing the tournament. So they're so you know, grizzled veterans. They know how to set up a tournament fairly and how difficult and how to control the greens. In the USGA, they like to protect par. They like, you know, guys shooting about even par to win the tournament. They don't want to see, you know, weather permitting, obviously. They don't want to see 20 under win the tournament. And they do notoriously have some of the best courses ever. I mean, Shinnecock might be the number one course in the country.
Mm-hmm.
AT&T, I mean, Pebble Beach is way up there. And these courses that they have, I mean, Marion, I mean, you could go on the list of all the courses they've played. They play some of the most historic, beautifully hard, well-designed golf courses. I'd put Shinnecock at the top. And the thing is, they can't control the weather, especially in the summer when storms roll through or the wind picks up, and especially out there in Long Island, Shinnecock. And it's unfortunate I wasn't there. It's one of the greatest courses in the country. I'd love to play that place. And they tried. They heard from the players. I talked to a lot of the players. They said Thursday, Friday, they did a really good job. It was fair. It was the greens were receptive. And then overnight, I guess Friday night to Saturday morning, the greens got baked out. And
gotcha.
You know, I think what happened is they dried the greens out a little bit on Friday. They wanted to firm it up for the weekend, but then the wind picked up higher than they thought.
Mm.
And that's all it takes. Mother Nature takes over. And all of a sudden, you have some ridiculous pins, some pins you can't get to, some greens you can't make a putt on, some chip shots, some iron shots you can't get to the hole. I mean, it's very difficult. So, you know, as far as an apology from them, you know, I think, you know, I don't know what to say about that. It was very nice of them to say that, but I think they need to kind of get away from the model of, hey, I want to see some guys. I want to see even par. Now, quit worrying about the score. Guys are better these days. I mean, there is not a player on the PGA Tour today that cannot win a golf tournament. These guys are well-groomed and ready out of college, and web.com is super strong now, and it's just everybody comes out ready to win. So the golf ball has changed the game a little bit. Everybody's hitting it a lot further. Guys are better putters. They're better players. They're better athletes.
Yeah.
The scores are just going to get better, and if the USGA continues to try to make these courses to protect par, they're going to have to do some extreme things. And that's why I think they're going a little bit over the edge sometimes. They don't mean to, but I think it just ends up happening. I think they just need to let, you know what, if 12, 14 under wins the USGA, US Open, let it happen. You know, but Carnoustie, I've played it a few times. I've been fortunate enough to play it in really good weather. This week is going to be amazing. Obviously, the wind is a huge factor. If it doesn't blow, you can shoot 66, 67.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a couple reachable par fives. But man, it is brutal.
Does it really favor a certain type or a certain style of play of golf, or is it kind of just whoever out there and can manage the damage better is gonna
if anybody's going to win, I'm sure there's a ton of people that haven't played Scottish golf or Irish golf, but Scottish golf is the turf is so firm and it's so nice to hit a golf shot. Well, you have to make contact, really, really good contact to make the ball spin properly, right?
Okay.
Well, if you just miss it, your miss hits get exaggerated.
Gotcha.
So if you barely miss it and you tried to land it in a certain knob or a knoll or a flat spot on the green and you maybe thin it and didn't spin it enough or you hit it a little fat, chunk it, and it comes up short, then everything comes into play. So ball striking is absolutely premium. Hitting the ball crisply. And not just the right distances, but the right flights. And if, like I said, if the wind picks up in a Carnoustie golf course like that, where you know precision is so important, off the tee, there's a lot of strategy involved there. You can hit 2 and 3 irons all day and be short of these bunkers, or you can take on the bunkers and hit drivers and get way down there. Some of these firm fairways, you're going to see drives over 350, 400 yards. But that's how this golf course is built. It's built to, hey, How good do you feel about your game today?
Yeah.
You know, come on, bring it to me. You know, it's a pretty incredible design, and I'm looking forward to watching it this week.
And then finally, you're going to go back to defend your Barracuda Championship. What's the big key for you going back there to keep your confidence level up and defend the title?
You know, my entire career, like I said, I've been playing for 20 years. This is my 11th year on the PGA Tour and 15th year as a pro. And I've worked with stat guys. I've looked at my stats over the years and how basically I've always hit the ball pretty good. Putting is becoming more and more important, especially since the ball has kind of pinched us closer together. So you really can't separate yourself that much with ball striking anymore. Inside 100 yards for me and putting. Putting. I've got to make putts. And last year I had a crazy story. I was playing really, really good golf. I was kind of making some cuts and finishing back and forth, kind of middle of the pack. And I'm up in Canada. Well, I'm in Destin, Florida, with a vacation with my family and a bunch of families. I missed the cut in Canada, so I went to Destin for a few days, and then the next stop was Reno. So we rented this house down in Watercolor, down there in Sandestin area. We had all the families, and I stayed there for 3 days. And people are asking me, well, all my friends are like, hey, you know, how'd you miss a cut? I'm like, I'm playing really good golf. I said, I'm just not making enough putts. I'm making some putts. So before my wife and family drove over from Houston to Destin, I told her, I said, hey, can you ship one of my putters? It's a big, long belly-style putter, but I don't anchor it. Obviously, I take it off my chest. And I said, send it to Reno. When I get to Reno, I'll come to Destin for a couple of days, and then when I get out there, I'll see if I can putt with that thing, because I felt something I needed to kind of stabilize me. Long story short, I fly out to Reno across the country, take 3 flights from little bitty airport in Florida, and I go to a bunch of different airports, and I finally get to Reno. I show up Tuesday morning at the clubhouse. I open up this box. I pull this putter out I haven't putted with in 2 years. I go to the putting green to practice with my caddy, and I did this one drill, and I went right through it. I never missed a putt, and I'm like, Casey, this thing feels really good. End up winning the tournament, and I probably had one of the best putting weeks of my life. And I actually, the next week in the PGA, at Quail Hollow, I putted beautifully all the way through Friday, and somehow the neck, I didn't know this at the time, but somehow in between the round Friday and Saturday, it got bent a little bit. And I teed off Saturday, and the ball wasn't rolling very well. And I'm like, what's going on? And somehow it must have gotten bent. It bends really easy.
Oh, wow.
And I guess after the round on Friday, maybe I leaned on it or something. Mm. And maybe when I was practicing or whatever. And then I teed off Saturday and Sunday, and I'm doing my routine. I'm like, the ball's not rolling right. Just keep doing what you're doing and keep putting. And I never really made any more putts after that.
Wow.
I just kind of missed a bunch of putts. And I found out the next week it had bent upright.
Jeez.
Which is so. If I would have known that, who knows? I might be a PGA Championship winner also, 2 in a row. But
yeah,
it was a special week. But for me, it's all about putting. I've just got to putt well. I've got to do my drills, and putting is like shooting guns or bow and arrows. You just got to do it all the time. It's just It's not putting for 6 hours a day. It's putting for 30 minutes or to an hour a day. Many times in a row.
All right. Well, Chris, thanks for coming in and talking to us, man. And again, good luck.
I appreciate it.
For you there at the Barracuda Championship.
Thank you very much. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Big thanks to Chris Stroud for coming in and spending some time with us, man. It's great to talk to him. Great to talk to a man that has just championship experience like that. Before we go to break, a couple notes. One thing, we have gotten some air quality alerts for today. If you have small children, please keep them inside. It's recommended they don't go outside. Also, it's recommended that you reduce outdoor activities, any kind of strenuous activities outdoor. We recommend you don't do that as of right now while the smoke from the fires are kind of being blown through Reno. So be aware of that and just kind of be mindful of what you're doing outside and who you're taking outside and how long you're out there as of right now. And before we go to break, one more thing. Haley, we got something for the people.
Yeah, I get to read it this time.
Yeah.
As part of our celebration of being your sports station for 50 years with Lotus Radio, you have the chance to win a pair of tickets to see the Super Suckers at the Greater Nevada Field on July 27th.
So that goes to caller number 9 at 775-333-0945 is the number. It goes to caller number 9. We're talking to Jay Norvell after the break. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show.
All right, we are here in studio with head coach of the Nevada Wolfpack football team, Mr. Jay Norvell. Coach, thanks for taking some time to come in and talk to us.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Especially as I imagine every day getting a little bit busier, getting a little more. Is it anxious or are you excited? What's kind of the emotion as you're getting closer? I know we're still a month and a half about out of the season, but what's kind of the emotion right now?
No, I mean, I'm a lifetime coach, so it's just the rhythm of the year for me. And it seems like every year after the 4th of July, everything starts rolling downhill pretty quickly. So your internal time clock tells you it's football season. Yeah. So we're excited to get going. We'll be in the office next Monday with all of our coaches ready to go.
Very cool. And you guys have had a really big recruiting season. It seemed like every other day it seemed like we were getting another name.
Yeah.
So how do you feel kind of about how your recruits are doing now that you've kind of had a chance to see them in a few different practices and camps and how they're meshing kind of with the team?
Well, it's really interesting. The recruiting process has changed an awful lot in the last year. Last year was the first year for the early signing date, December 20th. And we experienced most of our signees, probably 90% of our signees signed on that date.
Wow.
And so what it's done is it's accelerated this next class, this 19 class. We were able to go out in January and recruit for this next class. And then this was the first summer that we could actually have summer visits.
Okay.
In 30 years of coaching, we've never done that. And so we actually had 16 players in the last two weekends of June. From those two visits, we had 10 commitments. And so we're extremely excited about this new class that we have. We have a new recruiting coordinator in place, and Alex Collins, a young guy I brought in who was the assistant recruiting coordinator at USC. He's hit the ground running and done a great job, and our staff has as well. So we're really excited. You know, we have certain goals and the profile that we're looking for in recruiting, and what we wanted to do this summer was bring in guys that had outstanding talent but also have high character, and they are our very top players. And we were fortunate to get 16 of those guys on campus, and we think many of them are difference makers, the type of guys that we could build a program on. And very fortunate to have to get verbal commitments from 10 of them, and then we'll just continue to work the process.
Now, you have a very illustrious history. You've worked at Iowa, Oklahoma, Texas, UCLA, just to name a couple of them. But going through those programs, when you're recruiting these young men to come to Nevada, what's kind of the one value that you kind of put towards this program kind of is based off of and can really, really bring them to be kind of a bigger player and a better person?
Well, my history and my background is I've been around a lot of successful people. And so I think the first thing that we establish with them is that, what we're building this program on is some of the best ideas from programs that I've been a part of, like Oklahoma and Texas, and working with the Indianapolis Colts, and my years I spent with the Raiders with Al Davis. And so the very best ideas as far as putting a winning offense on the field, as far as structuring our practices in a pro-style manner, And we want to get to know these kids as people. Mm-hmm. I think the details of understanding each family and each kid is really important in the recruiting process. And we want them to know that we're going to help them reach their goals, both academically and athletically. And we want to play championship football. I think the University of Nevada is a place where guys can get their degree, can have a great academic experience, but also have a championship football experience.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if they have the ability to go on to the National Football League, we certainly can help them do that with our experience. So I think the kids have responded well to that. We've been very aggressive in how we've approached that and gone after those kids, and we're seeing a great response.
First year as a head coach was last year, coming into your second year now here as a head coach. What's kind of that biggest lesson you take? Because it's a big adjustment going from any kind of assistant coach or position coach to a head coaching job. So what's that biggest lesson that you learned that first year that you're going to bring over to the second year?
I don't know. You know, people ask you all the time, you know, what did you learn your first year? You know, I think the biggest thing is we learned our football team. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had a lot of experience that have prepared me for this. And, you know, I think we gave some of our kids the benefit of the doubt last year. And I think really we're starting from scratch in many ways this year. You know, we have players that have been in our system, guys that know exactly what to expect from our offense. Our kids are going into this winter and this spring and this summer understanding our concepts offensively. And I think we're just way ahead of the game. And this stuff really isn't rocket science. I mean, the kids have to understand your system inside and out, both on offense, and then continually practice it to master it. And so, you know, there's an old saying, success is modest improvement consistently done. And that's all we've done as a program is try to continue to improve every day, the little things that will help us improve and be the type of football team that we want to be.
Now, I followed the Wolfpack all of last season. I worked on most of the games. I loved it. I really liked what I saw and heard you doing with the team. So I'm curious, how do you feel with everyone rating you and your offense as one of the best offenses coming out of the Mountain West this year? How does that make you feel?
You know, I really haven't spent a whole lot of time looking how about people rate us. I just don't believe that that really matters. You know, we have a vision for this football team, and first and foremost, we want to be explosive offensively. Mm-hmm. And I think our kids understand that. We want to have an intelligent, accurate quarterback. We want to have wide receivers that can stretch the field vertically. And we want to have physical downhill running backs. Mm-hmm. And so we worked really hard to get that established last year. We really feel we're just scratching the surface of what we can do offensively. I think as we, you know, got through our conference last year, we were one of the highest scoring offenses in the Mountain West. We were the number one passing team in the Mountain West. And I just think we have so much more to go. We're just scratching the surface of what we can be offensively. We were undersized defensively, and we've really addressed our defensive needs as well. So I'm excited about our offense. I think we can be very special offensively with the type of receivers that we have, with the understanding and the accuracy of our quarterback position, and the competitiveness of our backups. You know, that's really important to us as well. So I'm excited that people, you know, feel like we could be pretty good. We think we can. And so we're excited to see us take the next step this year.
Right, right. And I was going to talk about the quarterbacks next. Obviously, you know, last year you went back and forth between quarterbacks. Is it solidified where Ganji's going to have that starting role?
Absolutely. Ty's our starting quarterback and one of the best leaders on our football team. I think he established himself you know, we had to go through some growing pains at that position. We have high standards for our quarterback position. And, you know, one of the things when I was hired, I really felt like we needed to recruit and add talent and competition to our quarterback room. And that's one of the things you just want to, you don't want to get caught short in a program having a lack of talent at that position. And so we recruited several guys, and we had to you know, Ty started out slow, and we had to go through those growing pains. But I'm really proud of how he handled it, the maturity, the way he studied. He certainly has the confidence of the coaches and his teammates. And I expect him to take it to another level. You know, I think last year, you know, it was an offense that we presented to them. I think this year it's their offense. Right. And I think it'll be much different. You know, they've been practicing for the last several months on their own. And our Ty has handled a lot of those practices. And they feel very comfortable with our system. So it's all about repetition and feeling comfortable. And so we're light years of where we were a year ago, and Ty's development has a lot to do with that.
I'm excited. It's going to be a great season, I personally believe. I can't wait for, you know, kickoff to start going and all the games and all the Wolfpack fans to get out there. So for me, it's like just, you know, go win something. Go do it.
And Ty Ganji is going to be leading him against a very solid schedule. Looking at your out-of-conference schedule, you guys play Vanderbilt and Oregon State.
Yep.
Do you feel like, because we're in the college football playoff era now, do you feel like the NCAA should have or make a rule kind of to scheduling that allows Nevada or maybe a UCF to play Vanderbilt or Oregon State or maybe a Texas to kind of help your resume to make you guys more or make these kind of programs more of a factor when it comes to playoff teams?
Yeah, I think there's a mechanism for that. Obviously a group of five teams, you know, we have to do a lot more to prove ourselves.
Yeah.
But I think there is a scenario where somebody could emerge that way. For me, it's all about the opportunity to compete against some of the best teams. And this year we get a chance to go play an SEC team. We get to go play, the premier team in the MAC conference, and we get to play a very solid Pac-12 team in Oregon State, which should be a very exciting game at home, and of course our opener versus Portland State. So, and they've been a very dynamic team when they've had opportunities versus Power Five schools. So, it's an exciting schedule for us. It's very diverse. I think it'll bring a lot to our fans, you know, being able to go to Nashville and, you know, open up on a Friday night versus Portland State at home and then come back home and play in Oregon State at home and then play in a salty, talented Toledo team, you know, which we were in a very tough game last year. And our preseason schedule last year, you know, we were a play or two away from having a different scenario. And that's how it goes, and we've worked really hard to tie up, some of those shortcomings that we had in the preseason last year, so we have a different outcome. So we're extremely excited for our preseason. I think it's really dynamic and exciting for our fans, and our players are certainly excited for the challenge.
Before football gets going at Mackey Stadium, we got a couple events coming up in the beginning of August. The first is Saturday, August 4th. You guys will have a women's clinic. Now, this is going to be at the Casho Fieldhouse at Mackey Stadium.
Yes.
What was kind of the inspiration behind the women's clinic?
Well, this is something that I know that has happened at Nevada before, and people remember and had so much fun. It's a very unique event. You know, over the years, we've done it at Oklahoma, at Texas. We've done it at Nebraska. It was one of our funnest events of the year, and it's really unique. It's just for the women, just for the ladies, and we're going to have so much fun. We're going to have raffle tickets. Our players will be involved, all of our coaches, and they get a chance to really be up close and personal with our players and coaching staff. We're going to go on the field and do drills. We're going to be in the meeting rooms talking about our structure. There's going to be, you know, a social with beer and wine, appetizers, football instruction. We're going to do a pregame little pep talk. And most people don't really realize, the my biggest pep talk is usually on Tuesday and Wednesdays. I don't really give too many fire-ups on game day. It's pretty much all been said by then, but we're going to give them an example of that, and we're going to take the field, and should be an absolute blast. And we hope everybody gets involved.
Whistles and everything? Going to have whistles on the field?
We'll have whistles on the field. We'll have dummies. We'll do tackling, catching the ball. But really just want to talk about all the facets of our program. And what do we do in the training room? What do we do in the weight room? And our players will demonstrate. There'll be raffles, interaction with our kids. They're going to be raffling off a football jersey photo shoot. The women get their pictures.
With
our players. And so it should be an awesome, awesome event. And we'll be raffling off some great prizes, sideline passes, trips to Nashville, our Las Vegas trip. There'll be some great, great prizes as well.
And, of course, the pricing for that, $75 per individual, $700 for a group of 10. That'll save you about $50. And all of these proceeds will benefit Nevada football. And if you do want to donate an item for the raffle, you can contact Susan Murphy at smurphy, it's M-U-R-P-H-E-Y, smurphy@unr.edu. It's a lot of fun. Like you said, you guys will be doing drills. You're going to be on the field and get a firsthand look at kind of how Nevada football is run. It's going to be a lot of fun. Then the week after that, August 11th from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., you guys will have a fan fest that'll also be at Mackey Stadium. You get to watch a practice there. You get autographs from the football team. And then you guys are starting a new partnership with Adidas, so you'll sell some of the old jerseys and stuff off like that. Is that also going to be at a raffle, or is that just kind of set up?
No, that's going to be, I believe that's going to be like a garage sale type of deal where I know we have a lot of our former equipment that will go on sale, and those proceeds will all go back to the athletic department. So if you want to get some great buys on Wolfpack gear and shoes and T-shirts and shorts, it's a great way to also see our young players and see our team compete. Should be awesome. We'll open up practice so everybody can see the Wolfpack and see some of our new players. We got a lot of really exciting new players that'll be part of it, and it'll give them a chance to get a little football in their system before our first game.
And you can purchase your season tickets there as well. And also, not only will you get autographs from the football team, the volleyball and soccer team will be there as well as cheer. And I'm curious, Coach, with football being kind of the king sport in this country, a lot of people look at it pretty much all year round. They either wait for it to start, or once it starts, they just dissect it at every point. How important is it for football to kind of use that pop other sports like soccer and volleyball, like having them come along to the fan fest and really kind of promote the whole of Nevada athletics?
Well, we have a very close athletic department. I think all of our athletes know each other, both on the men's and women's side. Mm-hmm. We pull for the other sports, whether it's basketball or volleyball or track or baseball. We want everybody to have success. And so we love it when they support us as well. So, this event is a way for us to kind of pull together and show our unity and just kind of get excited for the fall. This is going to be a fun football team to watch. We're very excited, and I think if people like football, they're going to like this team.
That's awesome. Well, I know Sean and I are looking forward to it. We'll be on some of the broadcasts. It's going to be a lot of fun. So, Coach, again, thank you for coming in. We really appreciate it, and good luck with everything coming up into the season. Hopefully we can talk to you again.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Big thanks to Coach Jay Norvell again for taking some time to talk to us. If you can get out to those events coming up in August, please do. They're going to be a lot of fun. I'm going to try and get out to them and support our Wolfpack here as we get closer and closer to football season. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk baseball as we get into the second half of the season. This is the Spencer Wilson Show on ESPN Radio, 94.5 FM.
Welcome back to the Spencer Wilson Show. It's time for My Two Spence Worth.
Welcome back inside the studio. We get set for the second half of the baseball season. It's been rather fun so far. It's been some exciting games and some exciting moments. Not so focused on the standings and the teams right now as much as pace of play rules. There's a lot of talk going into pace of play. We want to make games faster. We want fans to enjoy it and be able to be out of there in two and a half hours. And they put in like the mound visits thing. I mean, they've tried a few things in minor league baseball. The mound visits, all the clocks, stuff like that. And honestly, I'm happy to see baseball getting it. Because you see a lot of organizations that hear the talk and just kind of ignore it, like, ah, it's fine. Baseball's heard the talk. Like, okay, our games are too long. You want that changed. Okay, we're going to try and help you out here. But it seems like they're not – it's like a mother who has a crying child. Like, she knows her child's crying, so she's going to go over. But instead of, like, patting it on the back and trying to calm it down, you, like, grab by the ankles and swing it around.
Oh, gosh.
I feel like that's kind of where baseball is. They understand what their issue is, but they don't exactly get how to fit. Like, because the whole mound visits thing, I don't feel like has really helped.
No.
Like, we still have three and a half hour games because it's not really mound visits that were slowing it down.
No.
It's the fact that you got 9 guys or 10 guys coming to the plate that all have 6 or 7 pitch at bats, guys get on base, guys score, and all this stuff. I just don't feel like what they're doing is necessarily helping.
Yeah, see, and I'm still in the camp that baseball doesn't need to be sped up. You know, it's like I love when a baseball game goes longer. My family and I always call it bonus baseball. Like, if we go, if we spend all the money to drive out to San Francisco and to pay all the money there, it's like, I want bonus baseball. I want extra innings, you know? So I'm okay with baseball going a little bit longer.
Yeah, and I don't feel like it's something that, I mean, it's something we want, not something we need. Like, if baseball is three and a half hours, deal with it. It's the sport that, it's still fun, it's still enjoyable. Mm-hmm. Just, you know, get over it and enjoy the sport that you're there to see. Like you said, you pay to go see baseball, enjoy a baseball game.
Yeah.
That's the show. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks to Jay Norvell and Chris Stroud for coming and talking to us. Really appreciate that. They were very, very nice to talk to. Thank you, Haley. Thank you, Sean. Thank you, all of you, for listening. You can follow me on Twitter at @my2spenceworth.
You can follow me on Instagram at Haley Clemens, H-A-L-E-I-G-H.
And then just search Sean. I don't know what his under his handle is. It's something that sound guy, Sean. But thank you.
Yeah,
he doesn't know. But thank you for listening. Have a good weekend, everybody.
ESPN Radio 94.5 FM, KUUB FM, Sun Valley, Reno.